Right now, we welcome in a guy that covers college football. He was here in Tuscaloosa yesterday. He's the national college football writer for USA Today. George Schroeder, welcome into the game in Tuscaloosa. I hope you're doing well, sir.
I'm glad to be on. How are you?
I'm good. I hope your visit to our wonderful community was great yesterday. It's always good to see you national guys in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, Tuscaloosa is always fun, always a good place to visit, and it was just a quick whirlwind in and out, and, you know, I'll be back next time I see those guys, I'll be in New Orleans. So, you know, it was just a chance to sort of get a little bit of work done for some stories before everybody gets to New Orleans.
And if you look at Alabama and Ohio State as we approach this inaugural year in college football playoffs, what is the storyline? Do you think it's Saban versus Meyer?
Well, I think that's an easy one, but I got to tell you, I don't think anybody really knows what to expect because of the uncertainty at quarterback with Ohio State. Not that they're uncertain who it's going to be, but what to expect out of Cardale Jones. I mean, you know, you have to like what you saw out of him in the Big Ten championship game, but we really don't have any idea what to expect out of him. And, you know, Urban Meyer's pretty good at offense, and it'll be interesting to see what they come up with in a month. Meanwhile, obviously, Alabama hangs its hat on defense, and you know, it's... I guess that does take you back to the Meyer versus Saban storyline. I think that gets a little overplayed, but it's only going to get overplayed a whole lot more between now and then.
Well, you know, we were talking a couple of minutes ago, and I don't want to work too many callers in the conversation, but we had a caller from Ohio a couple of minutes ago, and some of their fan base was talking about the revenge game from Urban Meyer and Nick Saban, because these two great competitors battled in the SEC, as we have spoke about. Do you think it could be a revenge game for Urban Meyer?
Well, I don't know, but, you know, I'm not big on revenge, period. But when you consider that, you know, absolutely none of the players have any connection, it's, you know, this is not Florida, this is Ohio State. So, you know, it's hard for me to turn that into anything. You know, this is going to be about who's got the better roster and which team is, you know, prepared well. They're both prepared well, and who makes the fewest mistakes. And I have to tell you, if Ohio State had JT Barrett, you know, I'd be inclined to go, this could really be something. I think, you know, Alabama should win the game, but we just don't know what to expect with Cardale Jones, and so it's just hard to know. But in three seasons, Urban Meyer has really got a jump start. I think he's a year ahead of where he thought it would be. Jump start the process of building that program up. They have a big-time defensive front, and they've got speed, you know, at most positions. And you know, we like to chuckle, especially down south, about the Big Ten. Sometimes you're better than your league. Ohio State is a lot better than its league. So don't go, oh, they won the Big Ten. They're a lot better than their league.
How big of a gap is it when you look at the Big Ten as a whole? Just as leagues, not Ohio State versus Alabama, but SEC versus the Big Ten. We live in the South, so we hear this bias towards the SEC. But how big of a gap is it between the Big Ten and the SEC as a conference?
Well, I mean, the easy thing to say is there's a pretty big gap, but there's two problems with that. One is we're conveniently living out the SEC East in a lot of those conversations. Two is, if you want some objective data and it involves the SEC East, look at the team Indiana that won a Big Ten game on the final weekend of the year and beat Missouri at home. I mean, out on the road at Missouri. And Missouri, of course, won the East. So, I mean, you know, is it as good a league as the SEC? No. But we tend to not consider the SEC as a whole when it doesn't fit sort of the narrative sometimes. And the SEC East was so down this year. The West was really, really tough. What's hard to know is if it was a bunch of great teams or a bunch of good teams. I think Alabama is the team, and they obviously rose, you know, by the objective measurements, they rose and won the entire league. And I think they have the capability of being fantastic. But, you know, is it better than the Big Ten? Absolutely. I'm not trying to even compare them. But I am saying that how big a gap, I don't know. I don't know how big a gap it is. When an Indiana can come in and beat the Missouri on its own field, then it's hard to know anything.
Let's go to the other semifinal game. It's one that we haven't spent a lot of time here in Tuscaloosa talking about, but you look at Florida State and Oregon. What matchup jumps out to you in this game?
Well, I mean, I think Mariota against a really good defense. You know, Marcus Mariota is the real deal. I mean, he got a lot of play, and Nick Saban mentioned that, you know, he was excited with Marcus's class and the other two finalists. Obviously, he liked Mari, but Melvin Gordon, how classy they were and just good kids. I mentioned that yesterday. But it isn't just about being nice with Mariota. I mean, he is a big-time player, so I'm interested to see that. And so the matchup, you know, the quarterbacks aren't going to defend each other, but that's going to be the thing we look at, him and Winston. I'll tell you the matchup I was sort of looking forward to was seeing, and this is a big loss today for Oregon, was seeing their All-American quarterback, Ifo Ekpe-Olamu, and I usually get that right, and I might...
It sounded good to me, George. I'm not going to be able to correct you.
Well, in that case, then just edit that part out and just act like I said it right. But, you know, Ifo apparently suffered at least a torn ACL, maybe more catastrophic than that, and he's, you know, clearly out. And, you know, you're looking at a first-round draft pick. One of the nation's best corners is now out of the game. And when you look at some of those receivers that Florida State has, that changes the complexion, I think, a little bit of a secondary at Oregon that had gotten better around their All-American. So, you know, there's one we're not going to get to see. That said, I still like Oregon in that game. I think over the second half of the season, they played at least as good a football as anybody in the country. What they did against Arizona in the Pac-12 championship game was really impressive. And, you know, with Florida State, it's, you know, we keep going, oh, they're going to rise up and one of these games they're all going to put it all together. Well, I mean, at a certain point, aren't you kind of what you've been, you know, showing out there? And if that's the case, maybe they just beat everybody, but they just eke their way to victory. Maybe that's who they are. Or maybe when they get to the playoff, they face an Oregon team that's a huge step up in level of competition than anything they played all year. And if they find a way to beat them, they face an Alabama team probably, or an Ohio State team that's a huge step up in competition, and they have a hard time getting past those teams. And I think that's the more latter scenario. So I like Oregon in that matchup. I just think it's, you know, unless Florida State does something we haven't seen them be capable of all year and puts it all together, I think Oregon's a better team.
If there's only one adjustment that you could make to the college football playoffs, whether you want to talk about the selection committee, how we position these four teams, what would it be?
Go to 8 and let the conference champions all get in. You know, I realize not all conferences are created equal. It's sort of a mantra, especially down south. But it's also one of the very few objective measurements that we have in a very subjective sport. So I can't believe that I'm saying this because I've never been that guy, and I hope it wouldn't hurt the regular season. But I think go to 8, let the five automatic qualifiers from the Power 5 conference, and then have 3 at-large bids. You know, hey, by the way, that still gives you 4 SEC teams, and I'm kidding a little bit, but it gives you the opportunity for that. Short of that, I would love to see them get rid of the weekly rankings. It's not going to happen, but I think that because we are so used to poll mentality, it causes a great shock to the system when a TCU is seen at number 3 the week before and falls all the way to 6. When, in fact, I think they did what they said they were going to do, Ryan, and they, you know, they blew up everything every week and acted like they'd never ranked a team before, and so so they didn't really drop from 3 to 6. Just when all the bodies of work were in, this is what they thought of the teams. This is where they put them. But we were all watching every week, and I think it was a tough shock to the system. I'd love to see them get rid of the weekly ranking. It's great for talk radio, I'm sure. In fact, I know it is. It's great for those of us writing about it and everything else. But if it's in fact a bunch of meaningless rankings, which is what it's supposed to be, then it's just nothing but reality TV. And it's benefiting only ESPN, frankly. And I don't think you need that to drive the conversation in sports. I think we'd all be speculating and having a good old time without those rankings. All that said, you asked me for the tweet. That's not going to happen. They're going to keep doing that.
George Schroeder right now, USA Today Sports, USAtodayGot.com, national college football writer here inside the game. Maybe it's a homer question from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, but I'll work it into the conversation. You cover a lot of college football programs. You have a chance to visit programs that I'll never have a chance to do just covering the University of Alabama. But from your perspective, is there something that Nick Saban does as a program, as a coach, that's different when you travel to these elite schools around college football?
Well, he has maximized the resources at one of the top 2 or 3 or 5 places in college football historically. He's maximized the resources, and what he does is, look, we hear a lot about the process, and that's so important, just the attention to detail, and they know exactly what they're going to do. But part of the process is identifying exactly what kind of talent you want and then being able to go get it. And so what he has assembled over the course of these, you know, years he's been in Tuscaloosa has is sort of a self-perpetuating machine. Now, that doesn't mean that those things don't sometimes spring a leak and need new oil and stuff like that, and then, you know, one day it's not going to run as well. I mean, who knows? You'd like to hope it would if you're an Alabama fan. But what he's done to this point is kind of built a program that self-perpetuates. They keep just sort of plugging and playing in new guys, who many of whom end up, you know, heading on to the NFL or whatever else, but they're big-time college players at least. And so I think that's the best thing he's done, really. I don't know if that's a good answer to your question, but I think that sets him apart. Everybody wants to do those kinds of things. Not everybody's able to get the talent in order to do that. There's a whole lot of very organized, detail-oriented coaches. But what he's done is taken a place where you have, you know, you have to be able to hit the right guys, not miss on any, and then, or at least not miss on many, and then be able to just continue doing that. And he's done that. Jimbo Fisher maybe has begun to do that a little bit at Florida State, but he's several years behind in the process. Look, there are other places doing it, but if you ask what has set Alabama apart these last few years, it's been the sheer talent level. You know, and then everybody's sort of pulling mostly in most years in the same direction, and that's all a testament to Nick and his leadership and his organizational skills.
Well, and here sort of puts it into perspective that we're even having this type of argument, but we have the Saban versus Bryant arguments here in Tuscaloosa. And even to have those conversations is to go back and give credit back to Nick Saban, because, you know, you would have said, yeah, 2007, would you have even tried to present an argument? And nobody would have said, no, there would never be another Coach Bryant. But to even have this debate, whatever side of the fence you're on, is a credit back to what Nick Saban has been able to do here in Tuscaloosa. And I just wanted, from your national perspective, just to hear your comments.
Well, I think that's right. And I got to tell you, look, and this is, I'm sure I'm going to get in trouble for saying this. This is no slight to the Bear. But, you know, back in the day, there were five or six programs in the country, okay? And you could stockpile talent because the scholarship limits were different. And you did stockpile talent. Now the college landscape is flatter. You can go to Baylor, and you're on TV all the time, and your locker room has everything, probably including the waterfall, right? And, you know, there's no shortage of money involved in college football. They can retain good coaches and all that kind of stuff. You can go to Baylor. You can go to TCU. You can go to Mississippi State and have much the same experience. And so it's in the, you know, the scholarship limitations are there. You can only have 85. And the competition level, I think, across the board is better. Now, you know, and then there's the added thing. We've had the BCS. Now we're in a playoff. It's not just sort of a cosmetic win your conference and then see if a bunch of sports writers like you the best. And that helps you if you're a traditional helmet school. It's not that anymore. And so I actually think that Nick is succeeding in a tougher environment than the Bear had to succeed in. And I hope that doesn't come across as any kind of a slight to the Bear, because he's a legendary figure, and I don't know that anybody's going to surpass him in Alabama history or college football history. I'm just saying it's a different landscape, and I think it's more difficult now.
Hey, if you want to pepper George with tweets, you can find him, George Schroeder, there on the Twitter account.
You probably shouldn't have done that.
No, listen. We had this debate for several days last week, and it continues to be the conversation. It will continue to grow as long as Nick Saban is in Tuscaloosa and continues to compete for championship. USA Today Sports. George, Merry Christmas to you. I hope you have a great Christmas holiday break here, and we'll be right back at college football in the coming days. I appreciate you being part of our show here in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, can't wait. Merry Christmas to all of you guys.